Judy Rebick supports Ravel because
Ravel's one of the very few spaces anywhere that you get a variety of views. All the new movements that emerged in Canada, whether it was Idle No More, the Maple Spring, the first place they appear is on Ravel.
Thanks, Judy. Just a few reasons to support Ravel.ca. Go to www.ravel.ca/donate.
This is a Ravel Podcast Network show.
Ravel.ca. Hello and welcome to the late summer edition of Ravel Radio. I'm Victoria Fenner, coming to you after a very, very busy summer. That summer included a whole week of podcasts from the World Social Forum, a gathering of thousands of people from around the world. We all got together in Montreal for a week of strategizing, networking, panel discussions, parades, art making, for us, recording and interviewing, all done to help us figure out how to create a better world. Which is a bigger job these days than it used to be, it seems. So what you're hearing in the background are sounds from the opening march. It was so energizing, and I was really glad that Ravel had a whole podcast team to bring shows from the forum 5 days in a row. You can still hear them on the Ravel Podcast Network. Well, five shows were hardly enough, so today we're bringing you a couple of things which we weren't able to fit in, plus a sneak peek of one of our newest podcasts on the Ravel Podcast Network. Ravel Radio, the end of summer, the Where Did It Go edition. There were hundreds and hundreds of panel discussions, keynote addresses, events, art making, all kinds of things happening at the World Social Forum in Montreal. The hard thing was to make a choice of which things to go to. Now, sometimes there weren't a lot of descriptions in the handbook, so just had to pick one and see how it all turned out. So you never knew what you're going to get. Well, I was really lucky that the first panel I chose to go to was full of great speakers on a really important topic. It was called Indigenous People's Struggles and Resistance, Building Solidarity for Land, Self-Determination, and Justice. I'll be playing the entire talk in weeks to come on Ravel's podcast Needs No Introduction. Today, I'll play part of that talk. Joseph Wawati is an Algonquin elder from Barrier Lake in western Quebec. In 2012, he was arrested for protesting logging on his traditional territory, land which remains unceded territory. He speaks of his traditional life in the bush and the challenges his nation faces.
I was born in the States. I lived there for a little while, and I came back up here with my parents. And I went to boarding homes. I went to boarding school for 6 years. I stay away from my mom for at least a good 10 months per year, or 9 months per year. And it stayed like that until I was about 22 when I was going to school. I went to university in Chicoutimi. Most of my life was actually living in the bush. Learning how to live, learning how to hunt, how to trap, how to fish, and everything that I hate was actually from the bush. I hardly hate anything that was from unnatural world, which is the city. But I got used to it, eating that, so I went into McDonald's like everybody else. And went on so far after a while. But One of them that started in 1987, where the forestry company started to cut near where we used to live. Our band council decided to negotiate with the forestry companies. So it went up to 1991, where they made a trilateral agreement where the Quebec, Canada, and the band council came together as one to make a study. And the study was about how much land do we use, how much water do we use, what do we do with it. Band council turned that around and made it a business out of it with the forestry companies, because the forestry companies, they knew how much money they were taking woods out of the bush. For the last maybe 21 years now, our band councils have negotiated with the forestry companies every year. We have stopped, we have made protests. Some of us went to jail. I went to jail. I was caught for mischief only. That was about not too long ago, in 2012, I think, something like that, where we did the last protest against the forestry companies. It was actually in my father's territory. And we try to defend it as much as we can. But we're actually with no success, because somebody made an agreement already to let the companies cut, which it was the bank council. For the last 21 years that I've seen the Parc La Réandrie being cut, there's at least about 85% of the wildlife reserve that's been cut in where we live. There's hardly any animals. There's hardly no moose. There's a lot of deers that are coming in because of the clear cuts. And when they do a clear cut, they only put one species of tree. So therefore, the animals cannot eat. So they move, they go somewhere else. As soon as some of the trees they grow, they brush cut again. And they just leave that one tree there. Long, long time ago, before they did that, they used to cut, yeah, but they used to leave trees there and they just let the forest grow back on its own. It's not like that anymore. They dig up the dirt, they turn it around, they put trees there and they just leave it like that. There's a lot of wood out there that's not been used. And the forestry companies left it there. You cannot imagine how it looks like. Because if you would see the images of what they've done to our land, to our territory, to our way of life, they're destroying completely our way of life. And yet they want us to live in the city or on a reserve. But we're not like that. We're not made like that. We're made to be living in the bush, not in the city. So eventually we adapt. We adapt to living where we live today. I adapt to open the water with just a twist of my hand. I could flick a light, that's how easy it is. You gotta warm up your house, you just turn the temperature now. That's how easy it is. So anyways, I'm not gonna talk too much. My heart is filled with grief for all the things that's happening, you know, what the government is doing to us. I'm not talking about only the government of Canada. I'm talking also about the government of Quebec. Those are only cooperations. Those are corporate. It's an organization. An organization that gives other organizations. Like, I'm not sure anybody who has an organization, but they do have one. And guess where you get it? You get it from Canada or Quebec, one of the two. The one that lives here. You have to follow their laws. Because they wrote it down for you. If you don't follow those laws, they'll arrest you, they'll take your organization away, and they'll cut it off from you. They have the right to do that because they make it to have that right. If you stop them, they will arrest you. They'll throw you to jail. Like the way they did to us. So my life in the woods has been destroyed slowly. I have a hard time to hunt. Today, I've been so sick, me too, myself. Went to dialysis, I got a new kidney, I'm diabetic. There's a lot of stuff that's going on here. And this is the way we are. A doctor came over and he says, you know you're diabetic? I said, I didn't know that. Oh, it's genetic. I told you, you're full of shit. Sorry about the language. But that's the way I told him. It is not genetic. It's the way you feed us. Our system is not the same as yours. Even today, I still look around for what I'm looking for. Most of it is healing. Not a healing for me. Healing for the nation. Healing for your nation.
That was Joseph Wawati, an Algonquin elder from Barrier Lake First Nations in Quebec. He was part of a panel discussion at the World Social Forum called Indigenous People Struggles and Resistance. In weeks to come, I'll play the entire talk on Rabble's podcast Needs No Introduction. There are some excellent speakers from Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. I think you'll really get a lot out of it. You're listening to Rabble Radio, a production of Rabble.ca. Coming up next, when we're considering the fate of the world, it's hard not to think about the United States. Like it or not, often not, what happens in the U.S. affects the rest of us. The day before the World Social Forum started, I went to another parallel event, the World Forum of Free Media, and I saw somebody I recognized. I knew Norman Stockwell in his days as station manager of WORT, a great community radio station in Madison, Wisconsin. Norman has moved on now. He's not station manager anymore. He's now the publisher of The Progressive, a magazine on progressive politics that's been published since 1909. And yes, it's still on paper. I talked to Norman about the role of alternative media in this fractious, extraordinary presidential election campaign that's happening in the U.S. right now. Bernie Sanders was a great choice for president. Hillary Clinton, well, opinion is mixed on that. Yet, if they don't want Donald Trump for president, Hillary's it. So what's a progressive to do when there are no good alternatives? Here's Norman Stockwell.
Well, I mean, the thing about the election and any election in the United States is that the commercial media gets all of the advertising. And so you have all these 30-second attack ads and so on. And it's community media that does the heavy lifting of actually having the candidates on to do debates, to actually discuss issues and content. And I think that remains the same in this election as well. But it's even worse because so much of this election season has been about one candidate, Donald Trump, who's taking advantage of all of this free media by saying outrageous things and getting in the headlines round the clock. And then you have the situation with the Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton, who has a lot of baggage that she brings here and a lot of sort of backstory that needs to be told about the things that she's been involved in over the years. So community media and non-commercial media in general has really got a heavy task here of, one, to sort of explain what's going on with the Democratic candidate, and on the other hand, sort of show what's happening with the Republican candidate without falling prey to this sensationalism that the commercial media is involved in.
It's a big and complicated job that you've never seen anything like, I'm sure.
Well, at the Progressive Magazine, we have a long history, a 107-year history of being fiercely independent. We don't represent any candidate's views. Rather, we try to give people the tools and the information that they need to analyze what's going on in these elections. You know, the coverage that we do tends to be about social movements, about people that are working for change, and about exposing the inconsistencies and the inaccuracies of what you're hearing from the various candidates and campaigns.
What do you think is going to have to happen to heal the divisions that are happening now in the American people?
Well, I think a couple of things. One is the divisions in the American people are divisions that are being stoked and fueled by the both by the rhetoric of the candidates, but also the way the corporate media tends to amplify those voices. And so we've seen a lot of real division in politics in the United States over the last several years. And, you know, in my own state of Wisconsin, a state with a strong progressive tradition, we have a very right-wing governor at this point who's pushing legislation that takes away the rights of working people, that takes away the public infrastructure of the university system, and so on. And yet, he's able to win elections, and it's because of this rhetoric of division that's being sowed. Again, a lot of it, I think, you have to fault the system of political contributions and the system of big money being dumped into a race for television ads, especially in the weeks preceding an election. So if, in fact, Hillary Clinton were to win the presidency and were to be able to overturn that Citizens United decision, that would obviously be a huge factor. And there's a national movement across the U.S. called Move to Amend, which is working to amend the U.S. Constitution to make corporations no longer be considered persons, which is a very odd interpretation of a couple of lines in the U.S. Constitution called the Commerce Clause. And so, you know, those things, I think, definitely have to happen in the United States in order to change the political structure. In terms of the divisions right now, the Bernie Sanders versus Hillary Clinton camps of the Democratic Party, I think that a lot of people have moved from Bernie Sanders to Hillary Clinton because of the fear factor, because of the fear of a Donald Trump presidency and what that would mean, the disaster that would mean to the United States in terms of, you know, having somebody that's obviously so spontaneous, so hair trigger, having control of nuclear weapons, having control of many of the things that an executive has in the United States. So the Democratic Party is using that fear, I think, to gather people behind Hillary Clinton. But what they really need to do is they need to, A, answer the concerns that have been raised, Hillary Clinton's connections to the coup in Honduras, Hillary Clinton's connections to the coup in the Ukraine, Hillary Clinton's connections in so many different foreign policy areas where the United States did not take a good stand. And so those questions need to be answered. The Bernie Sanders campaign raised some of those questions, but mostly he steered away from foreign policy. Mostly his agenda was domestic policy, reform of the financial laws, and, of course, student loan debt. And both of those things are things that the Hillary Clinton campaign is adopting as it moves forward, at least in rhetoric. And so, you know, if they're able to use those as points of unity, I think that they will bring along a large portion of the Bernie Sanders voters.
A person who is going to vote for Donald Trump is not going to not vote for Donald Trump because you raise questions about Hillary, right? So, but yet, So, but you don't want to you don't want Donald Trump as a president. So, what is progressive media supposed to do?
Well, I think you know what we're seeing happening in the Republican Party is very interesting, because you're seeing a lot of former national security people and a lot of elected Republican officials that are either sitting this one out, that is, not attending the convention, not attending the rallies, or actively speaking out against Donald Trump. And that's creating divisions within the Republican Party that are probably as great as the ones in the Democratic Party between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. The question becomes, in terms of numbers, the Republican turnout in the primaries was higher than it's ever been in the United States. The Democratic Party turnout was actually lower than it has been in many primary elections. And so the question is, will they maintain those numbers? Because if the Republican Party is able to keep its turnout numbers high and the Democratic Party doesn't see high voter turnout, then I think that, it's anyone's bet what's going to happen. If those turnout numbers stay small on the Democratic side and stay high on the Republican side, is that that's going to tip the balance by 1% or 2%. So I think that the Democratic Party needs to do a lot of work to get the voters out, to get the voters to the polls. And what you've seen in a lot of states around the country in recent months and years has been these repressive voter registration rules, voter ID rules, and so on, that are serving to suppress voter turnout, that are serving to, particularly among African Americans, among seniors, among people that have various reasons for not having a driver's license or not having a way to get to a driver's license bureau to get a license before the election. And so those people, who are probably, for the most part, more Democratic Party voters than Republican Party voters, are the ones that are being disenfranchised.
What's your role in the media?
Well, I mean, in terms of the voter ID and voter registration issues, you know, that's something that at our station we've raised quite a bit in the state of Wisconsin, because it's a very big issue there. And they have now, just last week in the courts, overturned some of those rules. And so you do see some response. You see these things being, people become informed, organizations, voting rights organizations champion them, they take suits to the courts, and they do get these rules either put on hold or overturned. So, you know, if that trend continues, and if those people are able to vote in November, obviously you'll see a different result. But, you know, again, as we said at the beginning of this interview, the role of non-commercial media is really to do the heavy lifting of elucidating these issues for people in a way that you can't say in a 2-second soundbite and you can't say in a 30-second commercial. And so what we have to do is we have to give people the tools, the information about issues that affect their lives, and the tools to become active around those issues. And then, hopefully the result of that will be a more informed electorate going to the polls in November.
That was Norman Stockwell, publisher of The Progressive, a magazine that's been in print since 1909. And it's still in print. If you can't find it on your newsstand, and up here in Canada, you probably can't, you can also find it online at www.progressive.org. And finally, time to look away from the summer that was and what's ahead for the fall.
Harrismith now presents The Strange Wax Cylinders of Thaddeus Barnes, Adventure Number 1, The Black Hand.
Well, we've got a new podcast which launched at the Rabble Podcast Network a couple of weeks ago, and we're very excited about it because it's a radio drama, and radio drama is so cool. It was created by the creator of the Rabble Podcast Network, our very own Wayne McPhail. He wrote it, directed it, and even stars in it for a brand new online publication, harrowsmithnow.com. And he asked us at Rabble to partner with Harrowsmith Now to bring it to you. So I asked Wayne, who is this Thaddeus Barnes character anyway?
Thaddeus Barnes is an inventor who lives in a sort of parallel Edwardian Canada. And steampunk is a sort of a inventive lifestyle and sort of a craft area where people imagine a Victorian England or Victorian Canada, or in some cases the Wild West, where things were driven by steam, brass, leather. So there's all these fantastic kind of Jules Verne, H.G. Wells kind of inventions. And so Thaddeus Barnes lives in that world, in that sort of parallel steampunk world in Canada. And he's a inventor who has a lab in Port Hope, Ontario. He has an assistant named Whitby, and he has a daughter named Philippa, who is not only a math genius, but also a martial artist. Thaddeus Barnes has a tragic life. When he found that he was dying in 1912, he decided that he had two sons and a daughter, Philippa, and he wanted one of the offspring to inherit his secrets and find a safe that contained his fortune and his secrets. And so he hid six copper cylinders across Canada, and in a journal that he kept, he provided a number of clues that would provide the location of these various copper cylinders, each of which had a piece of a key that would unlock his safe and actually point to where his safe was buried. And his hope was that his daughter Philippa would solve the mystery, and or some of his sons. But when they came over to deal with the will and deal with their father's death, they came over on the Titanic, and they all perished. And the journal was lost in the Canadian archives until recently, where it was discovered by Harrismith. And now, once a week, we're publishing pages from Thaddeus Barnes' journal that will lead people across Canada to find these copper cylinders and eventually the safe that is hidden in all the clues in the journal.
So it's a hunt, and it's also a radio drama, and they stand alone, but they're integrated, right? That's the essence of it?
Yeah. And, you know, it's meant to be fun. And the other thing that we really wanted to have happen is that the clues are deliberately complicated. Some of them are geographic, some of them are literary, some are artistic, some are mathematical. And the idea is for people to get together, either in the Facebook group we created or in a coffee shop or at work at lunch or whatever, and say, hey, I don't get this clue. Has anybody know this? And somebody says, oh, yeah, I know that. That's this. Oh, great. And so we wanted it to be a social, in face-to-face social, and an online social thing. And that's starting to happen in the Facebook group we created, where people aren't giving the answers, but they're teasing other people and say, think about it this way or that way. And so it's doing what we wanted it to do.
Why did you want to bring this to the Rabble Podcast Network?
Because I think that it's a perfect place for it, that I would like the Rabble Podcast Network to move beyond the scope of the purely political. And the last retreat we had, we discussed just this, of how we become broader. And this seems like a perfect way to introduce that idea of doing something that's not factual, that isn't purely political, but there's some political underpinnings to it in terms of Thaddeus Barnes being a pacifist. And I thought that it's perfect for the Rabble audience. I think that it's an audience that would be very open to steampunk and very open to these kinds of puzzles, and would be really open to listening to this fun kind of radio drama and, you know, staying tuned for the next episode in the coming week.
Now, this is a whole other side of you that I've never heard before, Wayne. I mean, first of all, you wrote it, right?
Yep.
And you're also how many voices? Did I hear two voices? Did I hear the Serbian gentleman today having overtones of your voice, and also Monsieur Tesla?
Yep. And I do each episode has a sponsor, and it's a made-up sponsor. And actually, it was really fun to do, because I got a almanac or a collection of Scientific Americans from 1889, 1890. And so a lot of the ads are kind of rewritten ads from Scientific American back then, because it was all focused around stuff that almost felt steampunk, the sort of crazy stuff that, you know, like a pocket watch that could withstand 500 volts of electricity and all these weird things are actually real ads that I used, and I voiced that announcer for those ads.
You're having a lot of fun with this, aren't you? I can tell.
Yeah, it's really fun. And, you know, we recorded it. There was just a group of us that it was, you know, sort of like community theater. We all got together one night and recorded all six of them. And then I had a ton of fun actually adding sound effects and some all sorts of other stuff in there that was just really fun to do. And we originally had another guy who was going to do Tesla, and then he couldn't make it. So I ended up having to do Tesla, which was a lot of fun because he's such a weird guy.
That was Wayne McPhail, and that's the very same Wayne McPhail that helped create the Rabble Podcast Network, a whole other side of Wayne that we haven't heard before. Looking forward to hearing more about those strange wax cylinders and where they can possibly be. The cylinders remain buried, and the journal was lost until now. It was recently discovered in a dark corner of the Canadian archives and is in the possession of HarrowSmithNow.com. Now, in time for Harrowsmith's 40th anniversary, it's time that those contents came to light. So there's a contest happening. They've created a Facebook group where steampunk and history lovers, whom they call Barnstormers, have gathered to learn about the world of Thaddeus Barnes, solve teaser puzzles, decode the last letter Barnes sent to his daughter Philippa, and much more. So to find out more about how to join the contest, you can go to harrowsmithnow.com and keep listening to rabble.ca and look for the podcast, The Strange Wax Cylinders of Thaddeus Barnes. Well, that's it for this month's show. Saying goodbye to the summer, saying goodbye to a great event, the World Social Forum. Hopefully the repercussions from the World Social Forum will continue to resonate around the world, creating lots of the kinds of changes that we need. Rabble Radio is a production of Rabble.ca. I'm Victoria Fenner. And I was also reminded while I was at the World Social Forum is just how important alternative media is and how important Rabble is. We need you to help us keep the corporate media and their puppet masters in their place. Can we count on you? I knew we could. Go to rabble.ca/donate to make your contribution, because we can't do it without you. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next month.